We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
That one gloved down by Erickson. Fielder to hit now, and Nyquist, oh my, he's run into by Bolin. Right back ahead comes Seabrook with a shot. He's got it!
Take another look at the OT winner by Brent Seabrook. The big hit by David Bolin. There's Bolin. And then the eventual goal scorer is going to work himself into that area, and that's Brent Seabrook. The hit picks up the puck, and Seabrook comes in, takes a quick wrist shot right over the glove of Jimmy Howard.
What a great series, Doc.
It's an old tradition, but boy, does it ever make you proud that you get to see it as often as we do, and hopefully you do.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
That's some vintage stuff there, Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olczyk on the NBC call in May of 2013. Of course, Seabrook gets the goal, but the guy that created the opportunity, that's the kind of thing that doesn't always show up in the scorebook. And that guy is joining us. He is Dave Boland. He's on Twitter at Dave Boland, the 7-year Chicago Blackhawk, and more importantly, the guy who wrote the foreword for Jay Zawoski's book, The Big 50, The Men of Moments That Made the Chicago Blackhawks. He joins us at the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apford.com. Hi, Dave, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's your first thought about, if you had to just have immediate response when asked, what was meaningful about the career of Brent Seabrook?
Steve Z was a great leader, a great teammate, and a great friend. He was always one of those guys that, like, if something was down, I remember we were in Phoenix, and I think we were on a little bit of a losing streak. I think it was in 09 or something like that, and he was out with an injury, and we didn't really have anything after the game to kind of be like, this is what the player of the game gets. You get like a hat. Some teams do like a hard hat. We had the wrestling belt. And I remember after that game we won, Steve came in with like tidy whiteys on and knee pads and a big belt, and was giving that out to the game winner. So Steve was just an all around great teammate and a great person.
He talked about how the Hawks drafted him when he was a young kid, and it's such a hockey story when you hear about the path that so many of these guys take from 18 all the way to being an adult and having kids and having the amazing career he had. How do you describe that kind of relationship that he had with the Blackhawks organization and the loyalty and just the atmosphere in?
No, 100%, 100%. Everybody wants to stay with that team for, I always wish that I could have stayed with the Blackhawks, but that didn't happen. But for Siebes, that's loyalty, and that's the kind of person and kind of teammate he was. He was that guy that would always put himself first instead of the team in anything. And I think Siebes will be an icon and a bigger person and a huge part of Chicago now that he's done.
I think you sort of led us here talking about that one anecdote regarding Seabrook, but I guess the way he was described to me and the way the dynamic of those great teams worked, with Jonathan Toews was the competitive leader, that when it came to the nuts and bolts of hockey and finishing off every shift and winning faceoffs and the little things, that the competitive leader unquestionably was Jonathan Toews. However, Seabrook in some ways was the emotional leader. How are those things different, and how does it manifest itself?
No, 100%. Taser was that guy that was, you could see his emotions on the ice, and you can see him show it. But off the ice, when we were in the dressing room, that people don't see would be a guy like Seabrook. When we were in the room in between periods, and he's not yelling or screaming. He's kind of telling guys, hey, okay, this is what we got to do. Like, we got to do this. Hey, forwards, you got to get back, and the little things. Seabrook was always that guy. Or if it was if there was a time that we had a little bit of losing streak, or something was going on, Steve would be that guy to be like, hey, let's go get a few beers, or let's get a party going and cheer the guys back up and get them back riled going again. Steve was that guy, and he was just a great person and a great teammate to all of us.
Dave, that said, do you think that Steve would ever get into coaching?
I don't know. I'm not too sure. It would be interesting if he did. I know coaching's a lot of work. I've seen it. you're at the rink every day. You're there from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at night. So it's a long. If that's something that he'd like to do, that'd be great for him. He's a likable guy. He's great with young guys, and he's a great teacher.
It's amazing how fast time goes sometimes, because now with Marian Hossa was the first of this group, and obviously he came in later as a free agent, was older, but then he was forced to retire, and now Seabrook, and we know that Taves is away for an unspecified amount of time for undisclosed reasons. It's pretty much, you know, and Duncan Keith is finding a little bit left at the end, and Patrick Kane is still at or near the peak of his powers, and that's what's left of the core, those guys.
Yeah, playing NHL career is tough. I got to a certain amount of time that, hey, your body breaks down. Some things break down. You can't do it. I think Kaner is a freak of nature and dunks. I think Kaner could play till he's 50 and he'll still be putting up the same points and doing the same stuff that he's doing right now, and like he was doing when he came into the league. It's tough seeing the core leave, but I think you look at it, we brought some Stanley Cups to Chicago, and some great parties and some great friendships were made. So I'm just happy that I was a part of it and that I could be a part of all that.
Yeah, your appreciation, it always shows, and it's thusly appreciated by all of us who get to listen and talk to you and just hear your stories too. You mentioned Patrick Kane, and he just scored that 400th goal of his career. It's awesome to think that he could play that long, but in reality, how can you appreciate what he's done at such an early point in his career to have that goal?
Oh, no, 100%. I remember I was playing with the London Knights, and we just won the Memorial Cup, and then a lot of our guys left, and it was just me, Shrimp, and Hunter, a few guys, but Patrick Kane could have came and played with us, played with me that one year. And I think if he would have played, we would have had another Memorial Cup. But when he came to Chicago, I kind of was like, oh, geez, a little small. But once he came in, he was a burst, and he was like, he didn't lose a stride from junior going to the NHL. And that's the toughest part, is going from junior, playing with junior kids, going to play in the NHL with adults. And at the time when I came in and when Kaner came in, they were still men that were playing. There were still guys that were 35 and plus, and they were men. And it was a big step. So to see what he did at the start of his career and to see what he's still doing is incredible.
Now, this is the second time this week a guest has invoked the London Knights. You know, Kevin Weeks, we had him, and he was talking about it as well. How legendary a junior team, like what is the status and standing? It's a team of children, and yet the London Knights sound like they're there with the Yankees or Manchester United in some people's eyes.
No, 100%. When I first got to the London Knights, they weren't doing too well. I think they went one season with 3 wins or something like that, 3 or 4 seasons before I got there. And then Rick Nash got there, Corey Perry, then myself. And then a crew just started coming in, and you had Kaner, Yeah, John Tavares. There's a handful of guys that that came through that system, but you got Dale and Mark Hunter that played in the NHL and already knew what it took to get to the NHL. So they treated us like NHL players. They treated us just like, hey, this is your job. You got to come to the rink. This is what you're gonna do. We'll give you everything you need to succeed. But you need to be here every night. And that was the great thing about it with them. So we had a lot of guys come up through that, and it's great.
Okay, so we enjoy hearing your stories, and I can't wait to read the Vince Wan one that I know just dropped. I saw NBC Sports Chicago mentioned that one. But when it comes to Seabrook, what's a good Brent Seabrook story that you can tell us as we appreciate him right now?
Oh, geez, you're putting me on the spot.
It's okay.
Well, I roomed with Steve for a few years when we were playing, and I remember he always had his seven waters. He had seven everything. He had to have seven everything. He had his. I could. His routine was down to a T during the game and in the hotel room, to what shows we would watch before bed, to what dessert he would get before bed. So we kind of knew each other pretty well. And, yeah, Steve's was a stand-up person, a stand-up guy, and we had some great times together. I'm glad that he was my roommate there for a bit.
Is the legend true that maybe he might have put a dent in Lord Stanley's cup?
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure a few people did.
I think that's fair. It usually has one or two dents, I think, at the end of the celebration time that gets extended between the end of the beginning 100%. Of the season.
100%. When you throw in a few beers and a few vodkas, it's bound to drop.
I wanted to ask you, too, about your relationship with retirement in general and what advice you may have, because in my experience with proud professional athletes, some are totally ready for it, and the moment they walk away are completely at peace, and it's the right time. They know it's the right time, and others take years, and it's almost like a grieving process to let go and to cope and to move on from something that is a part of your identity. How has retirement been? How difficult is it? And what, having done it, what advice would you give?
Yeah, it's tough. It's not easy. You go from like for myself, you go from waking up in the morning, 7 a.m., getting to the rink, you have a schedule. Your schedule is planned out from October, September to almost June, and you know where you have to be. You wake up in the morning, go to the rink, come home, take a nap, go back to the rink, play a game, rest, wake up, do it all again the next day. Now you kind of wake up and you kind of look around. You say, "Well, what do I do today?" So it is tough. It's tough at the start. But you eventually find ways what to do and things to do and things that interest you. Right now, my wintertime consists of squash and staying active, and my summertime consists of golf and traveling. You got to find your sweet spots. You got to find things that you love and stick to them. And if it's hockey, stay in hockey. If it's something else, then something else. But it's tough leaving the game, and it's tough leaving a place like Chicago.
I think it's also tough for fans to have this transitional period where we're seeing really good hockey right now currently, especially for the expectations of the team. But we're also seeing the players that we mentioned earlier slowly start to disappear from this team and the championships that are remembered. And you understand that more than anybody. So what's some advice you would give for fans on how to correctly appreciate this time and remember the guys who really were a part of something very special?
Oh, no, 100%. That's like, you look at other teams. I was a big Toronto fan since I was a kid. They are just getting to a chance to win a Stanley Cup. They're right there. They're close to it. They're missing a few parts. But to have three Stanley Cups in Chicago and to have that excitement and to be a part of it is incredible. There is going to be some down years because you're going to recycle some guys and some new guys come in. You're not always going to be great, But hey, eventually Chicago's going to get back to the winning ways, and it feels like they are right now. For sure, 100%. Like, it's just having those three Stanley Cups in Chicago were unbelievable.
Dave Boland, this is a delight. Thank you for taking the time to do it. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Anytime for you guys.
Thank you. We wish you good golf in the future. Hopefully soon.
And good squash as well. All of it.
That's right.
That's quite a game, man. I did that once and realized that was probably not for me playing squash. Dave Boland.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Former Blackhawk Dave Boland, who had his own share of important championship moments. That is a name that will also be long remembered. We should continue the discussion about what the sort of Blackhawks legacy is here, because I know already texters are asking, is this a retired number? Is this somebody with a Hall of Fame candidacy? What ultimately is Brent Seabrook's legacy? And I wonder, too, about what it means symbolically for the team to also move on. It's not necessarily a negative. Because now, look, these are your defensemen. This is your team. You don't have some of this big presence looming over what's going on right now. We'll get into all of that with our own Jay Zawoski jumping on as well. That's coming up next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Start your day on The Score with Molly and Hall, live at 5 for Chicago. From Chicago, they're live and local, covering the Bears, Cubs, Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks. Molly and Hall, delivering the sports stories that matter to Chicago. Mornings 5 to 9, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station. It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and the radio.com app.
Happy Friday, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan Bernstein, Layla Rahimi. Brent Seabrook announced his retirement, and as he's speaking with reporters, boy, the way he's describing the condition of his body, this is a good thing. This is a good thing for him. This is a good thing for the rest of his life, because This sport is no joke, and it sounds like he legitimately has no ability left to skate, where he says he's having a difficult time even walking.
Ugh. That's brutal. Hopefully, maybe with some more rest, walking will be a little more comfortable later. But a huge thanks to Dave Boland. How good is he? Just talking about anything and everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. You know, those Hawks teams had So a lot of different kinds of personalities. It all seemed to fit very well. And I like to think that as he announces and makes it official, it makes it that much easier for some of these defensemen on this roster and some of these kids to assume their own leadership roles and grow into some of these spots. Jay Zawoski is part of the Madhouse podcast, and he's our executive producer here on The Score. What was your first thought, Jay, when you got the news?
Oh,
I guess we're not hooked up. Okay.
Dang
hey,
it.
I'm here. You got me?
Oh, there you are. Okay.
There you are.
Sorry about that. I think I had you on mute because I probably went to the bathroom while you were in segment. anyway.
Allowed?
My first thought was a little bit of surprise, because we kept hearing, oh, he's skating. He's trying to work his way back. He was close to returning last year when they were in the bubble. It felt like he maybe almost made that playoff roster. And then all of a sudden, he said it today, around Christmas, he couldn't walk when he got out of bed anymore. So, Dan, like you said, just reading this, the comments he's making during this press conference, it is harrowing what he's going through. And there's a quote here. He says, I told my body to screw off for 15 years, and it finally turned around and told me, I'm not going to do that anymore. So, it's just, look, the guy has given everything he's got to the Blackhawks, to the city, to the team, and I hope that I know his contract was problematic, but I hope that's not what he's remembered for, because without Brent Seabrook, they probably don't win any of those Stanley Cups, and that's not an exaggeration. He was an awesome hockey player that was just overshadowed by some legendary sort of generational kind of guys.
There's been a lot of questions on the text line, too, about how this would affect the Blackhawks' salary cap, this move. I'm trying to figure that out as well.
So he's on long-term injured reserve, so the cap hit is not on the books. They still have to pay him, but they do have cap space to use right now. I think it's very unlikely they're going to go. I mean, there's no one to sign at the moment because it's mid-season. I don't think they're going to go try to acquire somebody at the trade deadline. That would be foolish unless they can find a very highly paid, you know, young superstar. Like, I don't want to speculate because I'm just throwing names out there. Like, if Jack Eichel wanted to trade, that's mm-hmm. someone who you could trade for and then plug him in immediately, and he still has 10 years of good hockey left in him at least. So somebody like that, but I think that's a little far-fetched. And then the pieces you would need to complete that deal, they would sort of offset. You'd have to give up probably Kirby Dach. You'd probably have to give up Adam Boqvist. And then at what point is it not even worth really doing? So I think they're going to stand pat, maybe trade someone like Soderberg at the deadline, a veteran type, try to get some picks or whatever, and just stay on this course because they've arrived more quickly than they planned, but that doesn't mean they should abandon what they're doing. They should stick with the plan they're doing.
Is this a number to be retired?
I think so. I think so. And I think the fact that Chris Chelios wore the number 2 plays a role. That number should not be worn by a Blackhawk again. That's sort of how I think about it. You know, if some kid shows up and wears number 7, does it feel right? Probably not. Two of the best players in your franchise's history have worn them, not back-to-back, but pretty much back-to-back. That number should go. I think it's obvious that Kane, Taves, and Keith will go, Kane, Taves, and Keith will go up. And I think Corey Crawford's got an argument because he's won 2 Stanley Cups here, and he's homegrown, and his place in franchise history is huge. So I think those are the ones, when it's all said and done, that go up. 2, 7, 19, 88, and 50.
I like this quote, too. Phil Thompson tweeted it from the Tribune. Seabrook said that about Duncan Keith, he said he told Dunks about retiring Sunday night after the game, and he's been attached to him like he's wearing a leash.
That's adorable. They go hand in hand, those two names. Keith and Seabrook. It rolls off the tongue because you've said it so many times. It's like Taves and Kane is the same thing. You've said their names with each other so many times. That pairing was incredible, and it feels like forever ago, but they won a cup 6 years ago, you know, and those two guys were a huge part of it. And I just hope that his legacy is not tarnished by a problematic contract, which anyone else would have signed. Mitch came to me and said, hey, I know you're old and bad, but here's a ton of money. Do you want it? Like, absolutely. Sure. Thank you. I very much appreciate this stupid contract you're giving me.
One thing that I like to do, Jay, is take a look at stat comps for anybody on the day they walk away. Using the context of other NHL players, we do this in any sport, and luckily hockeyreference.com is no different. And some of these names I'm going to need some help with. But what's interesting, the most statistically similar player to Brent Seabrook is, of all people, Brian Campbell for career numbers.
Really?
Different skill set, but that's where the numbers...
Yeah, really different.
Yeah, right? But that's where the numbers came through. Now, here are the others, and some of these names are familiar to me vaguely, and some are not. But for total career, it's Brian Campbell, Kalle Johansson, Dave Ellett, Tom Johnson, Carol Vadney, Frederick Olausen, Earl Siebert, Wayne Redden, Tomas Kaberle, and Gary Galley.
You've listed a list of guys that are pretty to quite good.
Okay.
You know, those are guys who are not Hall of Fame types by any stretch, but really solid defenseman for a long time. Boy, that Campbell one is baffling because they're so different in the way they play. But I think Seabrook's offensive game was a little bit unsung. He was a better offensive player than he gets credit for, because Keith was always considered the more offensive defenseman of the two because of the speed, I guess he was a little more skilled. But Seabrook could put the puck in the net a lot. He scored some huge goals for the Hawks, including my favorite goal ever, the 2013 overtime winner in the conference final against Detroit, which, for someone who watched the Hawks suck for 20 years before they got good, to see the Hawks beat the Red Wings in that fashion, coming back from 3-1 down. And remember, that 2013 Hawks team was probably the best of all of them because they got out to that incredible start in the shortened season and then quickly found themselves losing 3 in a row to Detroit, facing elimination. And they came back and won 3 in a row. To longtime Hawks fans, that was such a symbolic moment. I know they'd won in 2010, but 2013 was a stronger roster, and there that dragon was in the Red Wings, and it looks like they had him beat, and then the Hawks came back. And then, remember, that was the late Nicholas Hjalmarsson goal that got waved off. So they had that goal got waved off. They had to go deal with that disappointment during the intermission, and then overtime starts, and Seabrook just finds himself in a slot. And we played the highlight before Bolin came on. Bolin makes the hit, puck goes to Seabrook, and the Hawks advance to the Cup Final. Just an awesome moment. I find myself, more than anything during the Dynasty, that's the highlight I keep looking up on YouTube and reliving, because it was just awesome. For longtime Hawks fans, that one is so representative of the change in tide from Detroit to Chicago.
Our friend Mark Lazarus just released a story about this on The Athletic, and he talks about how crucial that goal was and how meaningful. And he said if Seabrook hadn't done anything else, he'd still be an icon for that goal. That's how big it was.
Absolutely. For me, I mean, we still talk about the Kyle Schwarber home runs in 2015, the World Series that he put together too. Those little moments can define someone's legacy in a city more than their career numbers can. But that said, I think Seabrook has both arguments. You know, this is a guy who should be remembered as one of the all-time great Blackhawks. And I think now that the threat of him playing and taking a job from a young kid is over, I think Hawks fans are sort of exhaling and now saying, okay, let's remember Brent Seabrook for what he was and not the looming threat that he was 2 days ago, I guess.
Well, there is an effect on this team, though. I do think there is some symbolic effect because, look, let's go back to what we talked about very candidly regarding Jeremy Colliton and regarding a lack of buy-in and regarding the difficulty that Keith and Seabrook may have had with this system, merited or not, the message that sends to young players. We talked about it at length, and it does seem like Keith is newly bought in. We played his comments. It does seem like a page has been turned from the Quenneville system to the Colliton system, and I'll be damned that the system kind of works when guys are doing what they're supposed to do. And there were times last night they're flying around the ice, and I'm telling you, this Brandon Hagel's got a little Thaddeus Young in him in that the moment he gets in the game, good things just start to happen around him. You know, you expect his shifts are going to be positive shifts just because of he never stops and he's always being responsible and relentless. So the symbolism and the timing of this is kind of nice for everybody involved, that Seabrook gets to be celebrated on his way out, and it also just kind of clears the way for this team to step into itself.
Well, not just, you know, you're saying that figuratively, but literally it does that too. If Brent Seabrook's here and Jonathan Toews is healthy, then maybe Brandon Hagel doesn't get a chance. Maybe, you know, Nicholas Beaudin doesn't get a chance to show what he's got, and some of these other young defensemen that have stepped up. But you're right. The two guys who were most resistant to Colliton, as far as I know, were Keith and Seabrook, and especially Seabrook. And I think part of that feeling like, you know, last year, I know he wanted to play in that series in Edmonton. He said that he felt great and was sort of pissed that he didn't get to. But something happened this offseason that turned Duncan Keith. And I think, too, I don't want to paint Jonathan Toews in a bad light here, because there is no bad light to paint him in. But with him not being there, it does allow the coach to be the leader of the team, right? Like, Patrick Kane is not a vocal leader. Duncan Keith is not a vocal leader. Those guys lead by example, very much like Dave Bolin was saying about Jonathan Toews. So now Colliton doesn't have the specter of Toews and Seabrook looming over him, and he can get his message across. And I think it's very symbolic that Alex DeBrincat's wearing the A on his sweater, a 23-year-old. Patrick Kane's wearing it now permanently. Duncan Keith's going to have it until the day he retires. But the torch has been passed to this younger generation. And I think that while they're a better team with Jonathan Toews playing, this unique opportunity presented itself for the team to get some young guys in there and really shift the tide from old to new. And I think that's a good thing. And if and when Toews comes back, this thing's already established. And then they're just adding a great piece to a team that's better than a lot of people expected.
Wait till Kirby
comes back. Maybe it's not heartbreaking loss last night.
Yeah, that was their best game of the year, without a doubt. Jimmy Greenfield said that he thought that the second period last night was the Blackhawks' best period since 2017, which is saying something. They were really, really good last night. And what's impressed me about this team is they seem to play better against the better teams. They play well against Carolina and Dallas. It's when they play Detroit where they look like ass when they play the Red Wings. And the Red Wings are horrible. They're historically awful. And the Hawks just can't find their way against them. So to see the Hawks come out and not be afraid of the Lightning last night and sort of dictate the play for the better part of 60 minutes was impressive. And it sucks they didn't get the result they wanted. But I think, look, you sort of shrug it off. It's a point loss. But I think heading into the locker room, once the sting of that moment wears off, everybody in that room felt good about that game. And if they can play the remainder of their games the way they played last night, they're going to win a hell of a lot more than they lose. So I was really impressed with not just the performance, but how from the drop of the puck in the first period, they came out and dictated the play. It was really impressive last night.
Wow, look at that. That was more than a half hour of straight-up hard hockey talk on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. Next up, it's time to have fun, or more likely, it's time to have fun, because it's Friday, and we could do that, and we're going to. On the Midday Midway, I brought up it's like a sci-fi magazine that was offering $250,000 to anybody who could prove they had a superpower. And people thought they had superpowers, and they didn't, because when asked to actually display it, they weren't able to do it. Yet, some of us have, or believe we have, mundane superpowers. I mentioned that mine is being able to spot fake hair. I can get on an airplane and walk to my seat in the back and be like, yeah, that's a toupe. That's a rug. That guy's got a good one. That guy's got a bad one. And I don't know how I developed that power, but I do. Jay Zawoski says he can tell exactly what his daughter is going to ask for based on the way that she says dad, the very first entreaty. Mike Mulligan has a built-in GPS. Shane Reardon can tell the breed of or mix of breeds of any mutt. And Lynn Bramer can tell you how old you are based on the first album that you purchased with your own money. These are the examples. What is your mundane superpower and how is it displayed? 312-644-6767. Friday Fung is next on The Score.
We are Chicago's number one sports station. Chicago guys talking Chicago sports. Listen on your radio, your laptop, your mobile device, through the radio.com app, or tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
I love Friday Fung.
Friday Fung with Bernstein and Rahimi.
Fung is winning. Winning is Fung.
We're going to do it. We're going to do your mundane superpowers.
Friday Fung.
For me, it's being able to have toupee dar. I know when somebody has plastic hair.
Say one word to anyone and I will kill you. Do you understand me? It looks real.
I know it. You can sense it. You know it. You know the good ones. You know the not so good ones.
Don't tell her about my hair. Let it go.
Jay said his superpower was knowing what his daughter is about to ask for by the way that she says dad.
Dad, no, you cannot have apple pie.
Friday Fung.
630 says my mundane superpower is flipping back to a sporting event 10 seconds after a goal or a touchdown.
Friday Fung with Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
You know why over the years I've loved this whole segment? Because I don't have to do anything, and I essentially get to be a listener. We just get to be entertained. And it's your stories, it's your creativity, it's your true tales, and it's super easy. And for us, it's really, really entertaining. So welcome to it, Layla.
I'm really excited about this. Everybody talks about it. I'm glad we're bringing it back. I feel like it's a natural extension of Score Tales, and you know I enjoy as much as I hate the text line. And let's face it, some texter is the one who came up with CIA Molly. So best bit I've seen so far on the station is from the text line, so I love that people always chime in. And let's also accept the fact that the confessional aspect of the text line is bizarrely awesome and sacred. So this is a good place for this today.
I like that slogan, bizarrely awesome and sacred. I also like the fact that you're discovering your inner Liam Hendricks with the giant Starbucks, apparently, today. It's
a reused cup from yesterday because I like to rinse mine out. And I threw a Vital Proteins collagen matcha latte in there today. I need some caffeine at 10:45.
and then you can give the cup to Shane when you're done. 312-644-6767. Let's get started. What is your mundane superpower? It is Mike in Palatine to get us rolling on the Score.
Hi. Superpowers, right? So I can tell the gender of a pregnant woman every single time before the baby's delivered.
Wait, the gender of the baby or the gender of the woman? Because if it's a pregnant woman, I'm pretty sure the gender.
Good question. Good question. So I'm 21 for my last 21. I'm guessing right. I have friends and neighbors who come over to me to ask me, what do you think? And I've always been right. And I think it originated because my wife, when she was pregnant with my son, looked absolutely beautiful. And then when she was pregnant with my daughter, she looked less beautiful. So that's kind of my thing.
Okay, Mike, I am going to also credit you with this because I have a friend who said that she, when she was pregnant with her daughter, she said, girl, babies just suck the estrogen out of you.
That's
what I've heard,
too. She talked
about how her, like, hair was more brittle and, like, her skin didn't glow as much. So you might be onto something.
Okay. Yeah, and I was careful not to say that to my wife, but it was pretty clear you could see something different was going on there.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. But yeah, it obviously raises a lot of questions. First of all, 21 for 21 is remarkable. But it also, we have larger, we're much more aware now of that it's not necessarily binary. So we get into some very, very different things from just blue, pink, and boy, girl. So I think it's the skills are going to have to become much more refined if we're going to do this absolutely the right way. 312-644-6767 is our number. We have a texter who is reiterating the superpower being that lights tend to fail when he is around, whether at home or in public. Light bulbs go out and or street lamps go out. And to me, is that just an awareness thing? Is that just because you're keenly aware of that happening?
This is the one that inspired your whole idea to bring back Friday Fung. So clearly they have another superpower in that they brought it back. But you're fascinated by this.
I am, because this is, here's one from the 815. I can perfectly time when commercial breaks will end during sporting events. That's the opposite of what someone said before, obviously, of being able to have just missed a goal or a touchdown. The 630, I worked as a mechanic, and when I needed nuts, yar, or bolts, I was always able to grab the exact amount I needed every single time.
Whoa.
Well, good at grabbing
nuts. That
is a
superpower.
Congratulations to you. It can't be, though. That's got to be observational bias. It's got to be like 2 out of every 10 times you remember. It's like, oh, it can't be every single time. Because then it would start getting genuinely weird.
We need this person. Because how many unnecessary home improvement store trips have I made in my life? 11 billion. We need that guy. 847, my superpower is walking into a restaurant and knowing within seconds if it's going to fail. Are you John Taffer from Bar Rescue? I need to know more.
I get that. Yeah, see, for me, that's a location issue. I subscribe to the Anthony Bourdain theory of haunted restaurant locations. There are restaurant ghosts that will cause a certain restaurant to fail. No, even if it seems perfect, certain locations are haunted. Here's an email that's come in from Rudy. Rudy says, my mundane superpower is while traveling to a foreign country, everyone asks me if I need to buy weed. It's...
Or 20.
He says, it's never my wife. It's never anyone with me. It's always directly to me. I don't know if it's my hair, my clothes, my face. I have no clue. I once made a bet in Playa del Carmen with another couple. We just met before we went out to sightsee the nightlife and grab some dinner. I said 10 people would approach me to buy pot without me ever saying a word. He said, I got to 13 before we even got to the restaurant. So yeah, I won $100 on the bet. I did the most responsible thing possible. I accepted my winnings and bought weed for everyone. He said it was a fun vacation and I look like a Jedi master. Is that a good superpower, I guess?
I appreciate the conviction. I am I am thoroughly entertained right now. Text line is, I think the superpower of our text line currently is that it's really funny. Because 708 hits the nail on the head for me. My superpower is finding the wrong woman.
Well, Voodoo Child says, my innate superpower is being able to plan my shopping through a store without ever having to double back down the same aisle. Ooh, that, you know how hard that is? Because they change things around in the same stores, and like you know you need ranch dressing and chicken stock, and like, wait a second, I was just in that aisle. That's really good. But he says, subsequently, my kryptonite is always picking the slowest checkout lane.
Sort of a, the grocery gods giveth and the grocery gods taketh away.
Mm-hmm. It has to be a balance, right? You must come out with sort of the karmic balance of all things evening out. The 708, quick and to the point. I am the Michael Jordan of walking into cobwebs. And quite naturally, I took that personally.
As a short person, I enjoy this comment a lot because I always wonder what it's like to be tall, and I have a feeling that person's probably pretty tall.
Or they're in the woods a lot.
These are your options. You're either tall or you're in the woods. Dan and Layla's psychic hotline. For now, it's free because we're not very good at this. This one's great. 779. My superpower is turning off any Chicago sports game right before a comeback.
The 815 says, my mundane superpower, the ability to guess people's middle name. I have a 95% hit rate. What?
95%?
Terrific stat.
All right, guess
that's
Layla's.
That's impossible.
Okay. Guess Layla's middle name. Let's see how good you are.
Yeah. Guess my middle name. Do it.
John is in Skokie. He's next on the score. Hi, John.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Layla. My superhero mundane achievement is I'm averaging above 50% on guessing the contestants on Jeopardy's daily double wagers.
Whoa.
So I know it's, you know, the sort of the spirit of this Friday Fun today. It's sort of stupid, but let's say, you know, there's three a show. And a lot of time they're saying, Alex, I want to make, or now it's Ken Jennings or the producer, I'm going to make a true daily double. Well, you guess that one half the time, you're right. But if they're saying, I want to guess three, I want to wager 3,000, I want to wager 1,600, I'm getting that two thirds or one a show. And over the week, you know, I don't watch every day, but I don't know how I'm doing it. People are watching with me, they're seeing it. So that's sort of my stupid superpower right now.
Have you talked to Joe Ostrowski about this? Because if you can set the line on a daily double wager, you might have something working.
Yeah, it's not really helping. I've never tried out for the show or anything. I'm not getting a lot of the answers right. But it's the one part of the show where I'm saying it right when they beam into the daily double. I'll say that person's betting 2,000. And more than 50% of the time, it's happening.
I wonder if you can get a market on that. I wonder if FanDuel can supply some ability to have you turn a profit on that. That may be the most mundane one yet. That could be our winner. I think it's the driest martini.
That's why I called in. All right, have a good show, guys.
John, thank you.
Love it. That's a good one. And I think there might be an actual, like, prop bet potential there.
The 847 says Layla's middle name is Bucket. No.
Dang it, they're right!
Steve-O and the Bucket. Middays on the score.
It's true. That is, how did they know?
.630, mine is literally hitting every red light. That's usually my thing too, although I will say one night back when we used to take regular cabs, one night I took a cab back from a late night downtown, and I was in the back of the cab, and we greened every light. Every single light. And we got, and I at the end, I said to the cab driver, I said, do you realize what just happened? And he said, yeah. I said, has that ever happened to you before? He said, nope. I said, that was kind of magical, wasn't it? He's like, yep. I gave him a huge tip and went in and went to sleep. Because that felt like absolute magic. And that will never, ever happen to me again in my life.
Where in the tournament of greatness do you see that? Because to me, that's at least a 2 seed.
Yeah, it's too much of a one-off, though. It's too rare. Amazing. Tony is in West Chicago. He's on Friday Fung on the Score.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Mine is, I know when I'm going to get my car washed, it will rain or snow within 24 hours. Especially when I pay top dollar.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought about that yesterday. I got my car washed yesterday, and I thought the same thing. But I go to the one on Fullerton that's $4 and has the free vacuum thingy. But I vacuumed my car.
You know, there is something very satisfying about the car wash cheap vacuum when you know you've like vacuumed out your car sufficiently. That is a good feeling.
It is. You know what you can't get out of a car, though, with a vacuum? Hockey smell. You cannot eradicate hockey smell from a car.
One of my first questions when this whole pandemic went down was, what on earth is going to happen to hockey equipment? Because you have to sanitize that stuff 11 billion times anyway. Nah. And I know I've used that number twice today, but they're both accurate references.
It stays in the garage. You open the bag, you sort of take the chest pads out, and you kind of let them sit, the hockey pants and the goalie cup, which is, I don't know if you've ever seen what a goalie cup looks like.
No.
It's a contraption. It's a thing. It's not a regular like sports cup. It's because you can imagine, you know. 100
no, I can't imagine. Explain, please. Please explain the thing that covers the goalie's penis.
It looks like a tactical. It's hard to look it up. You should. It just. It's something.
I will not look it up.
You don't think it would be very comfortable to wear. And I remember when we took Jason to Gunzo's when he first needed one, when like the kids first got big enough that they said, now it's time he needs a real goalie cup. And we go to Gunzo's and we go in the bathroom and he tries it on. And I'm like, go outside and walk around to see how it fits. And like, what? And he almost did it too. He almost just started parading around Gunzo's. Because I said, yeah, you got to know. I said, why don't you just go out there and walk around for a while? And I almost got him to do it. All right, we're going to do more of this. 312-644-6767, mundane superpowers on Friday Fung on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Rahimi. But now you can watch the show live on Twitch. Just search 670 The Score on twitch.tv or on the Twitch app. Check it out now.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.